Welcome in, everybody, ready to dive into some seriously thought-provoking stuff.
Always up for a good deep dive. What do we have today?
Today, we're taking on this fascinating article from the Geopolitical Compass.
Oh, interesting. I've seen some of their stuff before. Always insightful.
Yeah, it's called, hold on, The Weaponization of Sectarianism.
Whoa, that title's a mouthful.
It really is. And get this subtitle, How Empire Erases Pluralism to Rule the Middle East.
Okay, now we're talking, getting into some serious geopolitics here.
Right, and the author is Raja.
Okay, I'm familiar with some of their work.
So the Middle East, right, has always been this incredibly diverse place, all these different cultures and faiths, just a beautiful tapestry, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But what's been happening lately is truly alarming, this systematic dismantling of that pluralism.
Mm.
Like it's being intentionally erased.
Do you think it's intentional?
Well, that's what Raja argues, that it's not just some random thing happening. They connect it to this deliberate strategy used by empires throughout history.
Okay, I see where you're going with this. Like a classic playbook for maintaining control.
Exactly. Think like divide and rule, but amped up to a whole new level.
And honestly, a much more terrifying scale when you think about it.
Right. So in this deep dive, that's what we're going to try to untangle.
Mm.
How do empires use this tactic of turning people against each other based on their differences, you know, their religion, their ethnicity, to hold on to power?
Fascinating question.
And Raja uses some really compelling historical and current events to illustrate this.
Yeah, the historical context is key to understanding the pattern. I mean, look no further than the British Empire.
Exactly.
Their rule in India, the British Raj, it's like the textbook example.
Absolutely.
They deliberately stoked tensions between Hindus and Muslims.
Which ultimately led to that horrific 1947 partition. It's heartbreaking to think about the millions displaced, the violence. And Raja even mentions how their own family was directly affected by this tragedy.
Oh, wow.
It just underscores the devastating human cost of these divisions that are manufactured, you know?
Yeah, manufactured is the right word. And it didn't stop with India. The Brits were at it again in the Middle East.
Oh, for sure.
The Sykes-Picot Agreement, that's another prime example.
Oh, yeah.
Carving up the Arab world, pitting groups against each other. They knew exactly what they were doing, preventing any unified resistance to their rule.
So we see how this isn't some relic of the past, this creating sectarian strife.
Mm-hmm.
It has a real tangible impact on people's lives today.
Absolutely.
And Raja connects these historical patterns to what's happening right now in the Levant region.
Okay, yeah.
Specifically Syria, Lebanon, Palestine.
Gotcha.
These were places where diverse communities coexisted. You know, they weren't perfect societies, but they were working models of pluralism.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're facing this really concentrated effort to erase that very pluralism.
Mm.
And the article points to two major forces driving this, both of which, get this, have been bolstered by U.S. influence.
Oh, wow. This is getting interesting.
Right. It's the expansionist agenda of Zionism.
Okay.
And the rise of Salafist ideology.
Mm-hmm. Unpack that a little bit for me.
Okay. So, because Zionism, the article talks about this thing called the clean break strategy.
Mm-hmm. Clean break. I'm not familiar with that.
It basically advocates for Israel to destabilize its neighbors in order to achieve regional dominance.
Wow.
And Raja argues a key part of this strategy is the destruction of Palestinian identity.
Okay.
And then you have Salafism, this very strict, rigid interpretation of Islam. And it's being promoted by Saudi Arabia. Now, isn't Salafism pretty diverse itself? How can we talk about it as one monolithic thing?
You're right. There's definitely internal diversity within Salafism.
Okay.
But what Raja is focusing on is how a particular strain of this ideology, a very specific one, has been used to replace the diverse Islamic traditions that were historically present in the region.
Ah, I see.
And it often results in other religious communities being targeted, their cultural practices being suppressed or even outlawed.
Wow.
And what's really troubling is how this aligns with U.S. and Israeli objectives in the region.
So you have these powerful forces, all with their own agendas. But they're converging in a way that leads to the elimination of diversity.
Right, yeah.
It's like this perfect storm. Ever as the people caught in the middle, they suffer the most.
Absolutely, they always do.
Like Aleppo, for example.
Mm.
This incredibly diverse city historically. But as Salafist influence grew, they started targeting Christian and Shia communities.
Really?
Yeah, desecrating their places of worship, banning their cultural practices, imposing these really strict rules like mandatory veiling and alcohol
Oh,
bans.
wow, that's intense.
It's scary to think about. What are the long-term consequences of this kind of cultural destruction?
Well, not only is there the immediate loss of human life, but you also have this disappearance of a rich tapestry of cultures and traditions. It's a loss for humanity as a whole.
Right, it's like we're losing a part of ourselves when we lose that diversity.
And we see a similar pattern playing out in Gaza.
Okay.
Raja argues that Israeli actions there are part of a larger plan to create what they call a greater Israel.
So you're drawing a direct parallel between what happened in Syria and Lebanon and what's happening in Gaza right now.
Exactly. They're all interconnected and highlight the threat to Palestinian culture and identity. Even Lebanon, which was once considered this beacon of pluralism, it's being squeezed from all sides now. Salafist influence from Syria, Zionist expansion from Israel, and then internally you have the resurgence of these phalangist militias.
It paints a pretty bleak picture, to be honest. What happens when a society loses its pluralism? I mean, what's really at stake here?
That's the essential question, and Raja goes beyond the political and social
Oh,
ramifications.
interesting.
They delve into the philosophical implications. They bring up the work of the philosopher Charles Taylor,
Okay.
and he argued that pluralism is actually crucial for human flourishing.
I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, Taylor's argument is that when we engage with different cultures and ideas, it forces us to question our own assumptions.
Right, we get outside of our own little bubble.
Exactly. And that leads to greater empathy and understanding. This openness to different perspectives, it's what allows us to connect with our shared humanity.
So losing that pluralism isn't just about political control, it's about shrinking our capacity for empathy and understanding.
Exactly. It's a loss on a very human level.
And Raja takes it even further.
Oh.
They say it represents a rejection of the very values that allow societies to thrive.
That's deep. And what's really interesting is that Raja doesn't just leave us with this, doom and gloom
Oh,
picture.
good. I was getting a little depressed there.
Yeah, it's heavy stuff for sure. But they highlight instances of resistance to this erasure of pluralism.
Okay, so there's hope.
I think so. There's definitely pushback both on a global scale and at the grassroots level.
Give me some examples. What kind of resistance are we talking about?
Well, you have countries in the global south like Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, who are actively challenging Western hegemony, that
Yeah.
dominance. They're offering alternative models of sovereignty that prioritize pluralism and self-determination.
So they're not just resisting a particular empire. They're actually trying to create a world where different communities can coexist.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And they see the protection of diverse identities as essential to that vision.
Makes sense.
In fact, Raja specifically mentions Syria's survival as a pluralistic state as a direct challenge to this imperial agenda of erasing difference.
Oh, wow, they're standing up to that pressure.
They are. It's really inspiring. It shows that building societies that embrace diversity isn't just some pipe dream.
Right, it can be done.
It can, and we see this reflected in other parts of the global south as well. Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, they continue to chart their own path,
Yeah.
defying those Western dictates and showcasing these alternative models of governance.
It's like they're saying there's another way to do things, a way that respects people's rights to determine their own destiny, to build societies that reflect their values.
Exactly. And their involvement in movements like the Non-Aligned Movement and BRICS really reinforces that commitment to a multipolar world,
Right.
a world where power is more distributed and different voices can be heard.
It's a rejection of that old imperial order, a step towards a future where cooperation and mutual respect guide international relations.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
It's definitely a hopeful sign.
It is. And alongside these actions by states, you also have the power of grassroots movements.
Okay, tell me about those.
Raja highlights the BDS movement.
BDS.
Yeah, boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
Oh, right. Targeting Israeli apartheid.
That's the one. And it's been super effective in raising awareness and putting pressure on those who are perpetuating the injustice.
Yeah, I've seen how much it's changed the conversation, challenging that dominant narrative.
It has. And there are similar campaigns targeting Salafist groups, trying to cut off their funding sources. These movements, even though they're up against incredible odds, they're forcing the world to confront its complicity in the destruction of these pluralistic societies.
So even small acts of resistance can have a ripple effect. They can contribute to a bigger movement for change.
Exactly. And what's really powerful is that these struggles aren't isolated. The fight for pluralism in the Middle East, it's deeply interconnected with these other global movements for social justice.
You're saying it's all part of the same fight?
I am. Whether we're talking about challenging racism, resisting imperialism, combating climate change, fighting for economic equality, these are all interconnected battles for a more just and humane world.
It's a big picture kind of thing.
It is, and that's really important for folks to understand. This fight for pluralism isn't some abstract concept happening over there.
Right. It's not just about the Middle East.
No, it's a global struggle that affects all of us. It's about defending those fundamental values of freedom, equality, human dignity, regardless of where we live or our background.
It's about recognizing our shared humanity, even when we disagree.
And Raja makes a powerful point that if this destruction of pluralism in the Middle East is allowed to continue unchecked, it could set a really dangerous precedent for the entire world.
That's a sobering thought.
It is.
Yeah.
What's happening in the Levant is a microcosm of this global battle between authoritarianism and diversity, between those who want to impose one worldview and those who celebrate the richness of human difference.
Yeah, the homogenizers versus the celebrators of diversity, I guess.
Something like that.
And Roger points out so well, pluralism isn't just some abstract concept.
Right.
It's a human imperative. It's recognizing that human societies are complex and that diversity isn't a weakness, it's a strength.
Absolutely. And it's about creating societies where people from different backgrounds, beliefs, cultures can coexist and contribute their unique perspectives. It enriches the tapestry of human experience.
It's beautiful when you think about it that way.
It is. And these forces that are attacking pluralism, they're basically trying to unravel that tapestry to impose their own narrow vision of how things should be. So the question becomes, where do we go from here? How do we as individuals contribute to this fight?
That's the million-dollar question.
And while Raja doesn't offer some easy step-by-step guide, the article does give us a framework for thinking about our role in this struggle.
Okay, I'm listening.
It starts with awareness. We have to educate ourselves about these issues and understand how interconnected these different struggles for justice really are.
Knowledge is power, right?
Exactly. But awareness alone isn't enough. We need to go beyond just understanding and find ways to actually support the movements and organizations that are fighting for pluralism on the ground.
So put our money where our mouth is, so to speak.
Exactly. Whether that's through donating, volunteering our time, or even just raising awareness in our own communities, every little bit helps.
It's about using whatever platform we have to amplify the voices of those who are working towards a better world.
Exactly. And it's not just about external actions. It's also about looking inward, reflecting on our own biases and prejudices, and actively working to dismantle them.
It's about being willing to challenge our own assumptions, to engage in respectful dialogue with those who hold different viewpoints. True pluralism starts with each of us.
It really does. It's about cultivating empathy and understanding, a genuine respect for difference within ourselves and our communities.
So we're kind of at this crossroads, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. You have these forces of division and control on one side and this growing movement for pluralism and justice on the other.
And it feels like the stakes couldn't be higher.
They really couldn't. But what's crucial to remember is that the outcome of this struggle isn't preordained.
Meaning it's not a foregone conclusion.
Right. The future isn't set in stone.
Okay. That's a little reassuring.
It's something we actively shape,
yeah,
you know, through the choices we make and the actions we take.
So where do we go from here? What can we actually do to build that more just and pluralistic world?
Well, Raja doesn't give us like a simple five-step plan.
Right.
But they do provide this framework for thinking about our own role in this global struggle.
Okay, I like frameworks.
And it starts with awareness. Like, we need to educate ourselves about these issues, really understand how interconnected these different struggles for justice are.
Yeah, knowledge is power, right?
Yeah.
The more we understand, the better equipped we are to actually do something.
100%. But awareness on its own isn't enough. We have to move beyond just understanding and find ways to support those who are on the ground fighting for pluralism.
So like actually doing something.
Yeah, putting our money where our mouth is, whether it's donating to organizations, volunteering our time, or even just raising awareness in our own communities.
Every little bit counts.
Every little bit counts. It's about using whatever platform we have, no matter how small, to amplify the voices of those who are working towards that better world.
Right. So even just talking about it with our friends and family.
Exactly. Sharing articles, having those conversations. And it's not just about our external actions either.
What else is there?
It's about looking inward,
yeah.
You know, taking a hard look at our own biases and prejudices and working to dismantle them.
That's tough, but important.
It is. It's about being willing to challenge our own assumptions, to have those difficult conversations with people who hold different viewpoints. I mean, true pluralism starts with each of us.
It does, doesn't it? Like, we have to model that behavior if we want to see it in the world.
Exactly. Cultivating empathy and understanding genuine respect for difference, both in ourselves and our communities.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a sense of hope, even though we've talked about some pretty heavy stuff today.
I think that's important because the human spirit is incredibly resilient. That desire for connection, for understanding, for a world where diversity is celebrated, you can't just extinguish that.
It's like a flame that keeps burning.
It is. And the forces that are trying to divide us, they may be powerful, but they're not invincible. We have the power to choose a different path, a path that leads towards a future where pluralism flourishes and humanity thrives.
That's a beautiful thought.
And that's the message I really hope people take away from this conversation. The fight for a more just and pluralistic world, it may not be easy, but it's a fight worth having. And together, we can make a difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. Keep those questions coming. Stay curious. And most importantly, never stop fighting for a better world. We'll see you next time.